Today is December 9th, 2015, and this is episode number 336 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
Oh, all right, Brian, me.
and this is my good friend Brian Chaffin. Your title here?
A man without a clue. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I totally get why this caught you off guard.
I'm sitting here just waiting for the show to start.
Okay. So what I just learned is that you listen as closely as most of our listeners do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here. Good to be here. Yeah. It's good to be here. Let's see here. I think we have some topics. Let's jump right into my friend Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. And I'm betting you want to talk about his comments.
Yeah, some comments he made at... I'm pulling up the show because...
Was it a shareholder meeting?
It's a shareholder meeting, Microsoft shareholder meeting. And he is Microsoft's biggest shareholder.
Right.
And...
So it's like Satya Nadella was talking about Microsoft's efforts to get more developers in, developing for Windows Mobile. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, well, I'm actually trying to pull up the article... And
I'm trying to stall for you.
We'll be doing so any second.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty exciting, actually.
Yeah.
I could have done this beforehand.
Well, no, based on the way the show started, I really don't think you could have.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah.
So he was critical about two things. One is that Microsoft is not reporting cloud services and hardware actual sales. They're instead reporting what's called a run rate. And a run rate is basically taking an isolated period of time, be it an hour, a day, a week, or you know, a couple of weeks or a month, whatever, and then estimating or projecting and reporting sales based upon that isolated period of time being consistent throughout the fiscal quarter or fiscal year.
Now, see, to me, that almost seems like it should be not allowed.
Well, I think it is allowed, but you have to report it. You have to report it as such. You have to, you know, saying that you're doing a run rate. And, you know, keeping in mind, of course, that total revenues can't be reported that way.
Sure, that makes right? sense.
So really, this is just about obfuscating specific performance within the company's overall performance in a particular area. And
so this is something that you could use as a tactic to make sales look better than they are without having to lie. I'm not saying that's what Microsoft is doing. But
yeah, you could do that. You could also do it, like I said, to obfuscate actual performance, be it good or bad.
Sure. Yeah, a way to keep your competition from being able to accurately gauge how you're really performing.
Right. But I'm actually with Steve Ballmer on this, and those words might sound funny coming from me, but
yes,
he called it. I can't actually use the word.
I'm going to be mostly pedantic and say you are choosing not to use the word.
No, we can't use the word and keep our family friendly rating. But the word rhymes with bullshit.
That would be kind of a near rhyme, but it would rhyme with bull hit.
Fair enough.
I'm totally going mostly pedantic on you today.
You are actually. I don't know. That's kind of fun, actually. Nonetheless, he called it that, and I'm kind of with him. I think that Microsoft should if they're going to report those numbers at all, they should report the numbers and not report a run rate. Because their other option would be to not report them. You know, Apple does that. Apple chooses what it wants to report. And Mr. Ballmer said, and I'm quoting, it's sort of a key metric. If they talk about it as key to the company, they should report it. He makes a fair point.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the reality is that it does make it seem like Microsoft has something to hide. That like both areas are underperforming in some way, and they want to keep that hidden while they still try to build those businesses.
Now, and I may be mixing stories together here. Did he also say that he feels that Microsoft should be getting Android developers on board?
Yeah. Well, what Steve Ballmer wants Microsoft to do is the problem is the lack of apps for Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lack of apps for Windows Phone. For instance, there's not a Starbucks app for Windows Phone.
Now, to me, that's kind of telling. If a company like Starbucks doesn't see a need or see a value, for whatever reason, they're not developing their app for the Windows Phone, I'm inclined to think that they just don't see there's a market there.
Right. It's perversely and ironically and maybe even entertainingly very similar to the situation that Apple was in with the Mac in the late 90s. Not enough market share, so no one wants to make any apps. Now, the reality is that Apple was actually doing better there than Microsoft is, because the apps that were available for the Mac happened to, generally speaking, be best in class apps. Whereas the Windows Phone just doesn't have a lot of apps, and that's with Microsoft actually paying developers to do some work on this front for them.
You know, I have heard that Microsoft sends recruiters out to user groups, like developer user groups, to try and convince developers to port their apps over to Windows Mobile.
And I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, and they're not having any luck with that.
No one really wants to. You know, Android owns the market share in the smartphone business, and Apple owns the mindshare. Doesn't leave a lot of room for Android. Android owns the market share and Apple owns the mind share.
There you go. I was about to ask if you knew something I didn't.
No. No, I actually know several things less than what you know.
Well, I think that depends on the day.
And so Steve Ballmer's solution to this is to is for Microsoft to simply make it possible for people to install Android apps right on their Windows phones. And, you know, opening them up to the wonderful world of Android apps, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
It's an interesting way to increase the number of apps available for your platform.
Mm.
But you know, running apps that would essentially be in an emulation mode, because that's how I'm interpreting what he's saying. This doesn't seem like a great experience.
I don't know if it would be necessarily. I mean, Microsoft could build in all the right calls, you know, so that they could run. Yeah, I don't know how native. Yeah, I don't know enough about it either. I don't know that it would necessarily be an emulation mode, though. It's possible that it could be slightly better performance than that. Satya Nadella, who is Steve Ballmer's replacement at Microsoft, he's been there for what, a year and a half, 2 years now?
Yeah, something like that.
Does that sound right? You know, we could have looked that up, but
no, that's crazy talk, Brian.
Yeah, that's not how we roll. He put plans, I'm assuming, sorry about the noise, I'm assuming he put plans that Steve Ballmer had in place to make that happen. He put those plans on hold. And he is instead pursuing two other strategies. One is a universal app strategy that would allow developers to deploy their apps for Windows on the desktop, Windows on tablets, and Windows phone with the same app.
On one hand, that sounds great. But on the other hand, that sounds like just a major headache for developers.
Well, and Mr. Ballmer said, that won't work. and he actually said this. He shouted this out, I guess, from the audience. I don't know where he was sitting in the shareholder meeting. Is he on the board? I don't think he's on the board.
I thought he was gone completely, except as a shareholder.
Microsoft board.
We could have looked this up.
We could have. Some may argue that we should have. But Mr. Gates is still on the board. They have an 11-person board, and Steve Ballmer is not on them. So I'm guessing that Mr. Ballmer had a front row seat as Microsoft's largest shareholder. But he shouted out
about number of shares, not body size. I'm just being clear.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's probably the metric.
That's my assumption. Anyhow, carry on.
Steve Ballmer shouted, that won't work, on top of Mr. Nadella explaining this. The other thing,
so he just shouted out and interrupted him, ironically, much like I just did to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Precisely like you just did to me. And Mr. Nadella also wants developer tools for iOS developers to be able to easily port their apps to Windows Phone to make it essentially, as easy as a recompile button.
Okay, now this is where I'll try and do my Ballmer impression. That won't work.
Probably has more of a chance of working than Universal Apps. I mean, the problem with Universal Apps is the problem with Steve Ballmer's original vision for Windows tablets, which was to have Windows be universal. You know, the same operating system running on tablets, same operating system running on desktops. You're crippling both by saddling each with the other.
Yes, absolutely. And I think trying to port apps from other platforms into Windows Mobile is going to be a lot more work than a lot of people realize. Because if you're developing for iPhone, you are taking advantage of features and software hooks that just simply aren't available anywhere else.
Well, that's true. But if you're going to do that for one platform or the other, which would you rather do, Android or iOS?
You know, I'm not sure.
I mean, neither would be my
Would be my first choice. But if I were forced to choose, I don't know, because my decision would be based on which platform is it easier to port from.
Right, and to be fair, it's very possible that Android would be easier because it's got a kind of lowest common denominator thing going about it.
Yes, you know, that's my assumption.
In terms of hardware in particular. Whereas iOS has very, very particular hardware that it's set to run on. So I don't know, maybe I don't know which would be easier, but by and large, I think I'd rather have iOS app developers in my team than Android developers. If you're an Android developer, nothing personal about that. I just don't like your platform.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think probably the most efficient way to get people developing apps that are essentially cross-platform, so iPhone and Windows Phone, would be to try and do what Adobe did very unsuccessfully, which is develop a system where you can write and then compile an app for multiple platforms at the same time.
Yeah, and that worked out really well for them.
Yeah, I remember the briefing before that, and I forgot what that was called, but it they were actually using Flash as the development platform.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by it worked out well for them, because Flash is a catastrophic failure.
Yeah, and I asked, well, what about device-specific features? And Adobe's response was, well, you can't use those. And
right.
Yeah, and at that point it was my thought was, well, then why would you use this? Because you're not going to be able to give people a good user experience. And there actually were a couple good user experiences. They were games, though.
Right.
But man, they used a lot of horsepower and needed a lot of storage space to work.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, you know, Microsoft has got to do something. If it wants to be in the phone space, at this point, it has to have apps. And paying people to develop them, it doesn't seem to be working. You know, rolling out the red carpet doesn't seem to be working. So maybe making it easier for people, for developers to recompile or port their apps as one of those phone apps, maybe that would help get the ball rolling.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, the reality is that Microsoft has just lost this battle. Right, they really have. Windows Phone is a joke.
Yeah. I do know some people that really like Windows Phone, but I think in the end, it doesn't matter because Windows Phone doesn't seem to be a platform that is taking off.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear Steve Ballmer in your wonderful voice, or your impression of him, saying, that's not going to work, I think that that actually applies to everything that Microsoft is trying with Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Of course, then you also have the personality thing coming into play, where Steve Ballmer thinks it's okay to loudly interrupt the CEO of Microsoft in the middle of a presentation.
You know what he reminds me of? Hmm. He reminds me of a high school quarterback who is standing on the sidelines, just behind, you know, like on the other side of the fence, yelling at what his replacement quarterback is doing wrong.
Yeah.
You're not going to win the game that way. You know, any idiot should be able to see you should have run this other play. I mean, just... It's like, dude, you drove that company to the point of irrelevancy. So why don't you stand aside and see if someone else can't do something without you meddling in it, man? I mean, I'm with him on this one tax thing. And as a shareholder, he certainly has he has every right on the planet. Having any shares in Microsoft, he has every right on imaginable to speak his mind about what the company is doing, especially on financial issues. But when it comes to strategy, he tried and he lost. He needs to get out of the way and he needs to let other people see what they can do.
I agree. And I don't think that he's in a position where he should be interrupting and disrespectfully telling the CEO of Microsoft that he's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean that's the other thing. If doing anything to undermine Satya Nadella's
leadership,
yeah, is not good for the company.
No,
I mean, as a large shareholder, of course, maybe you know there is. I mean, if he probably truly thinks that Satya is going in the wrong direction, and as such, you know, he wants to make sure that Microsoft is going to do the right thing.
Well, my guess is he's in a position where he can call Satya and say, "Hey, Satya, let's get together for lunch on like Tuesday, okay? How was that?"
It sounded like a little bit like the comic book guy, a couple registers higher, a couple octaves higher. from The Simpsons. I mean, not that mine's been any better today, but yeah, it seems like if he's truly this critical, then he should be speaking to board members, to Satya Nadella himself, maybe to his buddy Bill. But doing it publicly like this...
That was uncool. That was grandstanding. And I think it was a petty move.
Yeah. Come on, coach, put me in, man. You know I can do it.
That was like some kind of weird Kermit the Frog thing.
That's all right. I am totally cool with our interpretive voices.
You know, when I do Steve Ballmer, I need to like inculcate myself in, like, am I using that word correctly? Like 20 minutes of speeches from Steve.
Yeah, you have to get into a mindset. You're like a method actor.
Yeah, I am. When it comes to my Ballmer impression, and I didn't do that today because, you know, it's not like I knew we were going to talk about him. I mean, right. Apparently didn't even know we were going to do a show. So
right. Well, I mean, to be fair, it caught both of us off guard. The fact that I started talking when the recording began, we should both be amazed.
Yeah, totally.
But clearly you were.
Totally. So, all right, let's talk about something completely different. Now, last week we were going to do a bunch of gift suggestions, and we did four of them. Mm-hmm. But we had four more to go.
Yes, we did.
So it's like 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, yeah, left. See, that's a great way to give people gift lists where they're not just overwhelmed with cool ideas.
Right. We were thinking of our listeners.
You're welcome, because, people.
You're welcome. Because we are so, so considerate and thoughtful. So why don't you go first?
All right. So last week, everything that I suggested was more expensive.
Okay.
So I thought this week I'd go with a couple gift ideas that are a little less expensive.
Okay.
Relatively speaking. So the first one is, it's a book I found. And this may be the first Steve Jobs biography that I am capable of reading from cover to cover. You can interpret that as you will. And it's called Steve Jobs Insanely Great.
Okay.
And it's a biography about Steve Jobs done as a graphic novel. Hmm. And you can pick it up on Amazon for, you know how they have their awesome prices? $15.36, which is such a weird price.
Yeah.
But list price is like $22 or $23.
Algorithms, baby.
Algorithms. Yep. And
what do you like about it?
I like the way the story is presented. So you see Steve Jobs as a brilliant visionary, but then you also get to see some of the less savory aspects of his life or of his personality. And it's presented in a way where it's not like heavy-handed or leaning towards deifying him or vilifying him. Mm-hmm. It gives a nice balance. I like the flow of the book, and I enjoy the artwork. And you, of all people, know that I have a very eclectic taste when it comes to art.
Yeah.
And drawing especially. And I just really like the way that this is drawn. It just has this friendly, fun feel, and it feels kind of cartoony a little bit the way it's drawn, but not so much that it becomes this distracting thing and you feel like you're looking at some weird caricature thing of Steve Jobs. It's just a really well thought out and nice, flowing, engaging story or biography of Steve Jobs. And the author, Jesse Hartland, she's an artist and clearly also someone that can put together a compelling story based on someone's life. And I just really like it. It's a hardback, so it's going to be more durable than many of the graphic novels that I have read in my life.
Right.
And
does that have a surprise ending?
Yeah. Yeah. The Titanic sinks.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. All right. Well, that sounds fun. It's I have been able to finish the Steve Jobs books that you can't finish. And I'm not a huge graphic novel fan, so I wonder what I would think.
Well, see, I've been able to kind of flip through it some, and I'm thinking that I'm just going to buy it so I can really read the whole thing.
Gotcha.
And that's actually quite a commitment for someone that has not been able to get through any of the Steve Jobs biographies.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Alrighty. Well, my next idea is the Code Black drone with an HD camera. Now, I have the Code Black drone with an SD camera. I don't have the one with the HD camera. Wish I had the one with the HD camera, but I don't. It's $67.99, which is 65% off retail, because we're offering this actually through our deal site.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a convenient little crossover gift idea. So anyway, it's heavily discounted, but here's the deal. First of all, I love drones. They're fun. Second of all, it's they're causing havoc everywhere, so get one while you can. But this one is fun because it's inexpensive, but it's really, really small. I mean, it's really small, and that makes it really fast as well. And so it's a fun drone to control. Now, that said, you're probably going to need space. At least I'm not good enough with a drone to be able to control it too well in a small space because it's so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the space, it's going to be a lot of fun. It has 6-axis flight control system. It'll do a 4-way flip, so you can actually do tricks and stuff with it. I mean, it's a fun little drone, and it does have this SD camera, so you can film while you're shooting if you want. It's a lot of fun. Our friends at Stack Social, who actually run our deal site for us, they sent me one last year, and it's a ton of fun. It looks really cool. If you'd like gadgets, or if the person you're buying a gift for likes gadgets and likes drones, it's a good opportunity. $67.99.
That's really cool. I'm assuming that that it has reasonable battery life, so it's not like you can fly for 10 minutes and then you're done.
It is not too much longer than that, actually. Most drones don't have a large flight time. This one's small, but that also means that the battery is smaller too.
Sure, that makes sense.
But at the same time, it also charges pretty fast.
So it's probably like a 15-minute flight time.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. Plus, it's recording video for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and with an HD camera.
That's really awesome. And $67.99, you said?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll have a link to it. It's on our deal site, too, but we'll have a link to it. What's your next one?
My next one is in one sense, it's a throwback. Well, for a lot of people who to their childhood. For me, it actually never ended. But then that's probably kind of a metaphor for my life now, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever have a ViewMaster when you were a kid?
Oh yeah,
I still do. And get this, I actually still collect ViewMaster reels.
Aha!
No kidding. So when I found out that ViewMaster was coming out with a new model, I actually got pretty excited. And so the new model, it's the ViewMaster VR for virtual reality.
Okay.
And it's $30. And I mean, you can walk into a Target store today and pick one up if you want, but you can get it for cheaper, like on Amazon, I'm sure. So the ViewMaster VR, it's in one sense, it's like Google Cardboard, because you actually put your iPhone or other smartphones inside it, or even an iPod Touch. Those will all fit. You put that inside this and then use apps to get that virtual reality 3D augmented reality feel.
Right.
Yeah. And they have these apps that you can download from the App Store, and they're like, I want to say $14 a piece.
Okay.
Or you can buy them as a kit in stores, and same price. And when you buy it as a kit in a store, you get this disc that looks like an old style ViewMaster reel.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hold your phone up and point the camera at it, then you get this augmented reality stuff. So you get these other menus and some options that you don't get to see when you get just the app download.
I see.
You know, so those are kind of cool to get a
hold of, too. Cool.
Yeah. And right now they have three different, they call them experience packs. And one is Space, which is the one that I picked up. And another one is called Destination. So it's like really cool locations from around the world that you get to explore.
Okay.
And then the third one is called Wildlife. So it's what you expect. It's
sure.
Get to experience different wildlife around the world. And the Space one that I've played with, you can navigate through our solar system, and you can learn about the planets. You can look at different spacecraft that we've made, like spaceships and satellites. And so there's just all this really cool content that you can look at. And since you're doing the VR thing, you're holding the ViewMaster up to your face. And if you look up, you're looking up. If you look down, you're looking down. You can look to the sides. So you get this 3D immersive experience with these things. It's really cool.
And that is cool.
It's a lot of fun. And the bonus is, because it's working in essence like a Google Cardboard type device, mm-hmm. to me, this is the coolest, most durable, and easily usable Google Cardboard
thing.
So if you have Google Cardboard apps, you can use them with the ViewMaster.
Does it work with the new, is it Jedu? The Star Wars immersive thing?
Yes, it will work with that too.
Excellent. Did I get the name right?
I can't remember off the top of my head because I'm so prepared today. But
we could have looked that up.
We could have, but we didn't. But you know what? I'll make sure that we have a link to the app in our show notes. How's that sound?
It sounds good. I am looking for. I think I did a cool stuff found.
You may have.
I thought I did. Where is it? I'm not finding it. Huh.
Well, we'll find it by the time this show.
I think it's called Jedu, right? J-A-D-U or something like that.
Yeah, actually, you know, that may be a sub-game inside the Disney Star Wars game. Or Disney Star Wars app.
Yeah, this, the one I'm talking about is designed to work with any Google Cardboard.
Yeah. And actually, I think that I'm right. I think that is inside the Disney Star Wars app.
I see. I thought it was a standalone app. I must not have done a cool stuff found on this because I don't know any details. Maybe I thought about doing cool stuff found.
Well, you know, Kelly Gumont was mentioning it to us.
Ah, yes.
And maybe your brain put all the pieces together and created this new reality for you.
Yes.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Excellent. Probably has something to do with these with this ViewMaster I have on my face right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got one too.
Right. All right. So I have one more gift idea for you. This is from Audio Engine, my favorite desktop speaker company.
I have their A5s on my desk.
I have a pair of A5s that are looking at me right now. Amazing, amazing speakers. So they have a Bluetooth speaker. We don't mention a lot of Bluetooth speakers. Bluetooth speakers are hot. Everybody wants a Bluetooth speaker. And my problem with Bluetooth speakers in general is that they usually sound like horrible.
I was really curious.
Because you've heard me say some things that aren't when we aren't on the air about Bluetooth speakers.
Right.
Most Bluetooth speakers sound like garbage to me, and I don't like that. I'm an audio snob. I like hearing stuff that's going to sound at least reasonably good. And Audio Engine did just that. Now they're not cheap. They're $299. But it's a small speaker, and they're basically designed to sound like the B2, the P2s, which are their smaller speakers.
Okay.
But they sound amazing. They're powered. They're Bluetooth. And, of course, they've got a port on them as well. But they just absolutely sound amazing. If you're looking for Bluetooth speakers that actually sound great, not just good,
but great, these are the ones for you.
Awesome. And that's actually quite an endorsement, because every time I've heard you talk about a Bluetooth speaker, there is an overtone of disdain.
Well, I mean, $299 is expensive. I mean, you know, most people who are blind Bluetooth speakers, they want to get something for $20, $30, $40. And they probably don't really care about that. They just want to hear stuff, especially young people with their Twitter tweets and their
Tweety boxes and
their supposed rock and roll and whatnot. I mean, and they just
kids on the they don't face.
Exactly. They don't care about it. And they don't care about the quality, I mean. And that's fine.
That's wrong with our country these days.
That's right. Not caring about the quality of the music. Well, we'll get to that. This is the next segment. And it turns out if you want your speakers to sound good, you actually have to pay for them.
That makes sense.
That's a set. But for most people, $299 is way too much. I'm well aware of that. But if you're in the market for Bluetooth speakers, but you want Bluetooth speakers that actually sound great, the B2s are from Audio Engine are it. They have it's a wooden case. It looks nice. They feel great. You know, everything that Audio Engine makes sounds good too. Favorite speaker company.
They do make good speakers.
Yep. All righty. Speaking of everything that's wrong with the country. We have launched a Twitter account.
Yes, we have.
Ace, what is it? No, it's Context Machine. @ContextMachine. So you could follow us there. Theoretically, we'll put out those Twitter boxes things when we do a new show, and you're welcome to talk to us there. Of course, you can also talk to me at TM O'Brien. And where are you, Jeff?
I'm Jay Gamet.
You're Jay Gamet. But Context Machine is our new account for the Apple Context Machine itself, and we're very, very happy to hear from you there. Whatever it is you want to say, we will probably see it. Well, I was going to say, we'll read it, and we will read it. But I'm sure that there are also some people that might want to say some things to us that we don't necessarily want to. Anyway,
that's what we have interns for.
This is a dark rabbit hole.
It is. So to pull it out of the rabbit hole, hey guys, we have a Context Machine Twitter account now. We're going to use it, and we'd love it if you did too.
@ContextMachine.
There
Twitter.
You go.
Yeah, we have a link in the show notes. All right, so on to something completely different. Donald Trump.
Yeah, the Donald.
The Donald. He apparently, we don't normally do politics here on the Apple Context Machine, but Mr. Trump is intersecting with technology.
Yeah, so we are doing technology. It just so happens that Donald Trump dropped this in our lap, and we just couldn't pass it up.
Yes. So what he said is that he was going to talk to Bill Gates about, and I quote, closing that internet up in some way, unquote, in order to prevent Islamic terrorist group ISIS from recruiting kids. Now, this is via Ars Technica. We haven't actually covered this yet. So actually, should I read this longer quote?
Yeah, the longer quote gives some nice context for where we're going to go diving soon.
We're losing a lot of people because of the internet, and we have to do something, said Mr. Trump. We have to go see Bill Gates and a lot of different people that really understand what's happening. We have to talk to them, maybe in certain areas, closing that internet up in some way. Somebody will say, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people. We've got to maybe do something with the internet because they are recruiting by the thousands. They are leaving our country, and then when they come back, we take them back. Which, unquote. Which is just, this is almost a string of nonsense words.
Yeah, my take from this, as I try and sort through Donald speak and take it back to human speak, is that he'd like to recreate the Great Firewall of China in the United States,
Or in some way.
Or just shut off the internet.
In some way.
Yes.
Now, mind you, by the way, the FBI says that 200 Americans have tried to fight for ISIS. Many of them actually don't make it out of the country. So, you know, they are recruiting by the thousands. That's actually true. There have been thousands of Europeans who have gone to to fight for join ISIS in some way in Syria in particular, but not thousands from the U.S. 200 as of July, according to the FBI, from the United States, and most of those haven't actually made it anywhere.
And yeah, so there's already an issue with this statement,
it's just nonsense. The whole thing is just nonsense.
Yeah, and I'm really curious who is going to think that restricting the internet and access to information in the United States is a good thing.
Well, the same person who wants to exclude people from entering the U.S. based on their religion. I mean, it's just completely un-American. It's completely it's not only stupid, it's un-American. In this case, it's just stupid. Closing that, what exactly are you going to close up? What are you going to do? And he has just no freaking idea.
Well, I loved his wording where he says that he needs to go to Bill Gates to talk about closing that internet up in some way, closing that internet up in some way.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of, the parallels are just too close. I feel like we have to mention this. It's like Todd Akin saying that women have a way of, closing that down, referring to like women
what
having
he said
some
was legitimate rape.
Right. But his point was that in his mind, women had a way of stopping pregnancy from actually becoming pregnant under any circumstances. I mean, it's just like he has no clue at all about how women's bodies work, Mr. Akin did. And Mr. Trump has no clue about the internet.
No. Well, I mean, referring it to as that internet, the leap that I take from there is that he really doesn't understand what internet is or how it's used or why it's used.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, to his credit, he basically said he was actually going to go talk to some people who did know, which is not his usual want. You know, his usual want is that he's just going to magically make things happen because. So, you know, to his credit, he's willing to go talk to someone who actually does know something. But you know what? Bill Gates doesn't know how to close up the internet in some way either.
And my guess is that if Donald Trump went to Bill Gates and said, hey, help me close up that internet in some way, Bill would say, you can't.
Bill Gates here. You can't actually close the internet down in any way that you're talking about. What you're saying is just, it's complete nonsense.
I really do love your impressions.
Thanks. I don't know. It's weird. You know, politics do intersect technology all the time. And when you're talking about companies in particular, as big as Google, as big as Apple, as big as Microsoft, politics intersect a lot. Regulation has a lot to do with what they, how they operate, and sometimes even where they can operate. And, but we as fans of technology also need to not have our heads buried in the sand. You know,
that's true.
When you have a politician saying something as utterly idiotic as closing that internet up in some way.
Yeah, what he's talking about in essence is government censorship.
Right. My point is that those of us who are interested in technology, we have to pay attention to this stuff.
Yes. Yeah. This is something that could have a very real impact on our lives and our jobs.
Yeah. It's like the flip side and to go ahead and give the slightest bit of equal time here, the Obama administration on the Democratic Party side of things, wanting to have backdoors into our encrypted communications.
That's no good idea.
We have to pay attention to this stuff. Because if we don't pay attention, the politicians will be given a free hand to do at best what they think is best, and at worst, just what they want to do. And in this particular case, in the case of Donald Trump, he just has no idea. These were nonsense words that have no relevancy, no relevance to the real world in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Yeah, it's concerning.
And somebody will say, "Oh, freedom of speech." These are foolish people. What he's saying is that people who tout the principle of free speech are foolish. That's what this man is saying. So this is
a problem as well.
This is the sort of thing that affects you and affects me. I don't care where your political leanings are. You should pay attention to that. And you should speak up. Take those polls when the poll people call you.
Right, and let them know what you really think.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what's going on there in the world of technology and politics. And close that internet up in some way.
Yeah. Well, I guess that'll take care of the leaky internet roof.
Yeah, and the dump trucks and the tubes.
And the dump trucks and the tubes. That's right.
Yeah. Well, if you just control where the dump trucks go in the tubes, you can keep the ISIS from recruiting the thousands of kids.
Oh, well, there you go, Brian. Problem solved.
Problem solved. Duh.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Brian Chaffin for president.
You've got my vote.
Right. Well, do we dip our toes into one of the other topics?
If you would like, sure, we can do that.
Which one? Your pick. Go.
Oh, let's see. We talked about Steve Ballmer. We've talked about Donald Trump. We shared some gift guide ideas.
This, by the way, this is what we professionals call temporizing. Go ahead.
How about, because we just weren't quite on the same page here. How about that guy that won his lawsuit against Apple in London?
Oh, all right. Yeah. Fair enough. I'm glad he won. Well, maybe. Glad he won.
I'm not.
Tell us what the story is.
Okay. So there's this guy and he got a text message on his iPhone that said, "Hey, there's something wrong with your phone." So he took his iPhone into the Genius Bar, the Regent Street Genius Bar or Apple Store Genius Bar
in London.
And on a side note here, my assumption is that it was just a phishing scam email or text.
Yeah, right.
And there was nothing wrong with his phone.
Sure.
So he takes his iPhone into the Genius Bar, and they have it for however long, a few minutes, an hour, whatever. And give it back to him and say, "Okay, it's fixed." And what they did was they did a factory reset on his iPhone, so it wiped out the data.
Right.
He didn't have a backup.
Oh.
And so he lost all his contacts, of course. He lost all his photos. And the salt in the wound for the photos, he had recently gotten married, and so he had all of his honeymoon photos for him and his wife. Plus, he had been going through, prior to the marriage, he had gone through treatment for cancer. Mm. And so he came through that really well. But while he was going through his treatment, he took photos of himself and his caretakers. Mm. So he lost all of those too. And so he felt that Apple owed him 5,000 pounds so that he could take his wife on a second honeymoon back to where they had gone so they could take new photos. And so he sued Apple. And the court said, yes, you're right, but you're not getting 5,000 pounds. You're getting, it was like 1,200 pounds.
1,800 or 800 pounds. Or one of the two.
Yeah.
I forget which. It's funny. I couldn't remember if it was 12 or 18.
But it was less than 2,000 pounds.
Yes.
And so he was very proud and happy. Of course he was, because he won his case.
I bet it was 1,200 pounds and $1,800.
All right. We'll go with that.
And that's why I'm confused. Yeah. Definitely mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
Go ahead.
Mostly please. Pedantic. And so anyhow, he was very, very pleased that that he won his case. And he felt that this was a David versus Goliath sort of win, and that he had acted like a champion for the little guy.
Well, so here's the deal. I was actually hesitant to talk about this at first because we don't really know. One of his claims was that Apple didn't say anything to him, the Genius.
Right. They didn't ask. He says that the Genius Bar did not ask him if he had a backup of his data before they wiped his iPhone.
And here's the thing. We don't really know. We weren't there. We don't know if that actually happened. Clearly, the judge thought that that was the case. My opinion is that if Apple didn't talk to him about a backup and just wiped his phone, that he does deserve damages.
And my take is it's not Apple's responsibility to make sure our data is backed up and that that Apple owes him nothing.
All right.
It was still a crappy thing.
I will add to that he's complaining about free help.
Yes. Yes, there is that.
Right. So that's, you know, more fuel for your case. But here's the deal. Here's why I think that he did deserve damage. First of all, please note that he's not an American, so he didn't ask for $3 million or $15 million.
Right. Right. He asked for enough money to take his wife on a second honeymoon.
Yeah. He didn't, you know, he didn't ask for $120 million of pain and suffering damage. And so, which is fine. So he didn't do that, which is, you know, it's thumbs up in my book because I would not be on board with that. But here's the deal. Part of what Apple is selling is the ecosystem. And part of the ecosystem is this idea that you can get taken care of in an Apple store. And so Apple is selling us an experience. And this is one of the things we pay when we buy these high margin devices that we like so much. We're paying for that experience.
Right. And Apple gave us, as part of that experience, the tools we need to make sure our data is backed up.
It's true. Apple did, in fact, does provide most of those tools. Actually, it does provide all those tools as long as you have your own PC.
Or how about just using iCloud backup for your iPhone?
Got to pay for that.
No. You get some storage for free.
You get some, but not enough to actually back up everything on your phone.
Well, it depends on your phone.
And it does, and your usage, for sure. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Fair point.
But the point is, Apple includes some services to allow you to back up data.
Yeah. Nonetheless, not everybody knows this stuff. And not everybody understands this. And if he didn't know that they were about, like, maybe he knew enough that if they had said, we're gonna reset your phone, he might have said, whoa, hold on, I've got to back up first. Maybe he knows enough for that. If he doesn't know enough about that, the point is that the Genius does.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if the Genius actually did this, right? That was, like I said, that's the reason why I was hesitant to comment on this at all. But if the Genius didn't ask him about a backup before erasing his phone, I do think some damages are appropriate, because I think that the Genius is taking care of us when we go into an Apple store, or one of the things that we're paying for with these high margin devices.
Sure. And actually, to jump to your side of this, I don't think, based on what we know, there is any need to reset his iPhone. I think he just had a bad text come in.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
And
we don't know enough about any of the specifics. We can only talk general theory here.
Right. And we're not going to let specifics get in the way of a discussion.
Well, yeah, I mean, and because there is merit to just to the broader discussions here, and you know, another thing is that most of Europe does a better job of putting people in front of corporations. Here in the U.S., where we focus, and even we the people sometimes focus on the benefits to the corporations above the benefits to the people, to the customers in this case. And you know, I'm actually a little bit less concerned about Apple's profits than I am about this guy having this completely miserable situation where he did lose these photographs. If Apple was at fault for not telling him that he's going to lose his stuff when they reset it, I'm down with him getting some payback.
And I'm not, because to me, that's setting a precedent that when people lose their data, that Apple needs to give them money for it. And well, I know Apple, I'm really generalizing here.
What Apple really needs to do is, and you know, it's the interesting thing, by the way, on this, and I wonder what the judge made out of this. Apple usually requires a signature that acknowledging that you have been told that your backups are your responsibility and whatnot.
And
so did that not happen?
Yeah, we don't know. And my guess is that had this case played out in the United States, he would have lost.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah. But the UK and Europe tend to have much stronger protections for consumers.
Yes. And we, of course, also have our litigious society.
Yes, there is that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think at the very least, this will help Apple find reason to solidify its practices and what it does tell customers when they come into the Apple store.
Yes. And well, and in my experience, it's been very consistent.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah,
mine too.
Every time I get asked.
As a matter of fact, my gut feeling is to want to say, dude, they did ask you. You just weren't paying attention.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't actually know. I wasn't there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We weren't there. We don't know. And it's not like Apple has a camera with a audio recorder aimed at the Genius Bar, so they have a physical record of every customer interaction.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah, and it's not feasible for Apple to do that. Yeah.
Well, no, they do though, don't they?
They have security cameras, but you know, the security tape could show the guy signing a form.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't need to hear any audio.
Well, if they just had the form with the signature on there,
and if they have that too, yeah.
I mean that really
there's that.
But you know, we don't know. We weren't actually privy to the proceedings, and we certainly weren't there when it took place.
No, we weren't.
So what do our listeners think? Do you know?
Yeah, I do. They just called me and told me, and they said you're wrong, Brian.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you guys, let us know what you think. ACM at MacObserver.com is how you can write us. You can look us up on Twitter. Context Machine. You can also leave notes, leave a comments in the show notes at MacObserver.com/ACM.
Yes, you can.
Right? That's right.
Yes, that'll totally work.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know what you think because no, what I'm saying is give me validation, people. Yeah. Hey, Brian, we're out of time.
I know.
Yeah.
Wait for you to hit that button.
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question. Actually, Brian just told you all the places to hit us up, so do it. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.